Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Is This a Ghost? I'm Clayton Smith, and every week I tell a real ghost story from real history to my real friend, Patrick Dean, who doesn't take it real seriously, but who does yawn real big sometimes right before we start recording. This is not a good evening for you to come into this tired.
You know what? I'm also coming into it relatively sober, which is also maybe not good.
This is almost 100th episode, so you that's solely on you, friend.
Earned a night off. We leave for the House of Mouse in about, what time is it? 16 hours.
You're going to the big house, right?
Big house.
Very the big exciting. Ending. And we're doing a double tonight. Once again, a back-to-back double recording. So, I don't see a single thing that can go wrong.
What are you drinking there? Some sort of clear liquid with ice in it?
I'm glad you asked. Thank you for asking. This is I think I'm going to call it the Picnic Bend Suicide.
Oh.
We had the dregs of several bottles of Picnic Bend left in our bar, and I thought, well, these can go into one glass to make a normal-sized drink.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a little bit of the barrel-aged gin.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit of the hibiscus gin.
Mm-hmm.
And a little bit of the Navy Strength gin.
Mm-hmm. You know what I'd call that one? Since it's using the dregs of a bunch of bottles.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Dragon's Breath.
Oh, I hate how much I like that. Yeah, that's pretty good.
Get out the Sharpie, erase what you wrote, write that on the glass now. Yeah.
Do this. Yeah. Dragon. And Dragons, that's two G's. Dragons.
I think so. Yeah.
It's got to be, right? Yeah. Dragons.
Dragon's Breath.
Dragons, but like dragon. Okay. It's possessive plural. Okay, good. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm drinking tonight. Yes. What are you?
Lovely.
Are you drinking anything?
I might find something on the shelf a little bit later after we come back from break.
I didn't know this was going to be a lopsided show.
Well.
I'm suddenly very terrified for how this is going to go. I can't be the only one who, in the middle of the second episode, falls asleep. Man. It's exciting on this end, too, because I have, you'll notice here, not one, but two baby monitors next to me.
Nice.
Aaron is out of town for the next few days, and so I'm on solo dad duty. So it may be that at any point, given this evening's recording, I will have to pause for a second to go put a child back to sleep. So I will be drinking this drink slowly and measuredly. It's been a while since we've seen each other. It's been a couple weeks.
Yeah.
What have you been doing?
Oh, nothing.
Okay.
Literally nothing.
I thought so. Yeah. But I thought I'd ask.
Not many updates on this end. June got the stitches out.
That was
about
it.
About the only thing that really happened in the last.
Okay. That's a good thing. It's a good update.
Just been doing our normal getting ready for Disney, have a panic attack. Every 12 hours thing for the last week. And
now you are having that or someone else in your family?
We're taking turns.
That?
We're taking turns.
Okay. Yeah. That's fair.
It's called load sharing. It's modern parenting. It's when you you take turns having panic attacks about Disney World.
What could you possibly be worried about with Disney World? It's the happiest place on earth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're going.
Oh, okay. Yeah, now that you say that, yeah, okay, I get it. That tracks.
It should be a blast. It's just
Yeah, I mean. Every family thinks it should be a blast.
Yeah, exactly. Climbing Mount Everest is probably a blast as well when you get all the way up there.
That's a different kind of blast, I think. I just came back from South by Southwest
with
a bunch of my students. I was there for 5 days. Very exciting, very fun. Really good group of students this year. Good group of a good mix of undergrad and grad students. I had a lot of fun. I am exhausted.
Mm.
I did nothing but stay awake and eat tacos and barbecue and craft beer for like 5 days.
Oh, man.
And I don't regret it, but I will say it is not the same as it would have been 15 years ago after doing that for 5 days. But it was good. It was fun. I learned a lot. I saw some haunted stuff. I saw Frank Turner. Do you see? I don't know if you noticed. So Frank Turner. Do you know who Frank Turner is?
I don't.
I'm a little surprised to hear that. I know you're a metal. You're less of a punk rock now.
Mm-hmm.
But I know there was a punk rock time in your life.
Frank Turner.
He's a British punk rock artist.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason I know him is because of producer Ryan, because he introduced me. As you know, I know nothing about music. I know about four bands, and one of them is Beyonce. Is she a band, or is she?
I think so. Yeah,
she's a, okay.
She's an experience.
I've never heard her music, but I know that she exists. So I know very little about music, but Ryan has introduced me to Frank Turner, and and he's a great, really fun, like British kind of modern punk rock artist. So I definitely recommend him. But when Ryan and I go to our work bar, Casey's in Chicago, we'll usually play him on the jukebox. That's kind of our like Casey's unwinding after work soundtrack.
Interesting.
So I was at South By, and I was one of the nights I was in my hotel room, and I was like, I'm gonna go to bed a little early, but I was not quite feeling tired enough. I was like, well, I'll go for a short walk around the block first and see whose music has been keeping me up for nights on end, because that's what's happening. And so I wandered around for a bit, and I saw there was one of the hotels was converted into the British Music Embassy, where they just had like a rotating set of British punk rock acts for like four days.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, well, that sounds interesting. And one of my coworkers, the chair of my department, had said that it was worth checking out. And I was like, well, I'll go in there. So I went in, and I got a drink, and the band I was playing was pretty good. I enjoyed it a lot. They were punk rock, but like in a fun, approachable British way.
Sure. Okay.
And I thought, okay, this is pretty good. I'll see you. So I got a drink, and I sat on like, there was like a hill. I sat on the hill and just like, was like just having a quiet moment to myself with the band playing. And so, and that was great until I heard some students go, oh my God, is that Clayton? And then I turned around, and there were some of my students. And I thought, oh, God damn it. Okay. I have one moment of peace. But they came down, and we were chatting, and my chair of my department was also there somewhere, because they had just bothered him a lot, and then they came and bothered me a lot. Anyway, so I was like, well, this has been fun, but I think I'm going to go back to my room. But then the next act came on stage, and the students were like, oh, this, you sure don't want to say this is this guy named Frank Turner? And I was like, wait a minute. Wait a minute.
He's alive?
What? This is a real person who plays music live? I was stunned. I had no idea he was going to be there. And the students didn't know who he was. And I was like, do I know someone that students don't know in music? And then I stretched out a little bit like this. I cracked my knuckles a little bit. And I got real excited. I was like, no way. So, you know, I dragged them all down there. And we listened to Frank Turner. And he was great. And afterward, he was standing by off next to the stage. One of my students was like, hey, he's right there. Should we go talk to him? And I was like, yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. And I went and chatted him up. He was super nice. And he was like, you know, where are you from? And I said, Chicago. I'm here with some of my students. I'm a college professor. And we're all here. He's like, you brought students to this? I said, yeah, I know. It's weird, right? And he was like, I think it's awesome. And so he's like, well, we have to get a picture all together. And so he like called the students over. We all got a picture together. It was really cool. He was super nice. It was like it was an A+ concert experience. And it was a total surprise. What a great night. I was really excited. Now, I did not go to bed until 2 a.m.
Oh.
That has been the downside of this. But yeah, it was fun. It was good. I enjoyed it. We got some British listeners, so maybe they'll know Frank Turner. And I can rub that in their faces, I guess. I don't know. That's the end of my story. End of my story. But I was really proud of myself for knowing a band and accidentally showing up there. Any other questions?
No, I mean, I'm still just kind of stunned at staying up until 2 o'clock in the morning. That's just, I don't.
It has been.
It's not even years. A time. Oh yeah. Easily. It's been
years. This is the thing I always say, like when, you know, Erin, God love her, cause she's out of town right now, but usually I'm the one going out. If anyone's going out of town, it's usually me, and she's home with the girls alone. And that's obviously a very challenging thing to manage. And I think she also has this sense that like when I do these things, I sleep a lot and I always find ways to not. And that's on me, but it never happens, because sometimes I go into Frank Turner concerts just by accident and stay up till 2 o'clock. Or sometimes I turn on TV and I watch Cocaine Bear. Oh, I watched Cocaine Bear. I told you, I think I watched Cocaine Bear another night, and I was like, I'll watch a movie. How about Cocaine Bear? Have you seen it?
I have seen Cocaine Bear. It is.
It is a movie. It is
a lot.
It is. I couldn't sleep for 2 hours after watching that movie. Oh, man. It was just, boy. It was fun.
It was something. It's kind of like, we'll say it was Ray Liotta's last film. Right. Yeah. And so Ray Liotta, he plays, I don't even know what kind of character you would describe.
I mean, he plays a Ray Liotta. Liotta in the woods.
Sure, yeah.
Is basically what it is. It's Goodfellas in the woods is his character.
Like a very inconvenienced Ray Liotta in the woods. Just cranked everything to 11. It reminds me that, like, when it always kind of reminds me that Raul Julia's last film was
Street Fighter.
Yeah. And not
you
like
you gotta think that's probably not the way they wanted to go out.
I would love to see a list someday of like very respected actors who had just completely embarrassing final roles before dying.
Yeah. That's a bummer.
And I don't really know who would be higher than Ray Liotta and Raul Julia at this point.
I think Raul Julia is probably maybe a little higher than Ray Liotta. that was when I told my students the next day, I was like, man, I watched Cocaine Bear. And I expected them to all be like, oh, yeah, we know Cocaine. And none of them had even heard of it. So I don't
know. What?
It's weird. They're all, I don't know. Gen Z is very confusing.
They're constant. They're like, they're half cocaine at this point, aren't they?
They're half cocaine and half bear. But never the twain shall meet.
Mm.
So like, was it good? And I was like, well, no. Good is not the right word. Because I really enjoyed it. It was really fun. And I go, so it was good. I said, again, no.
Yeah.
That's tough to say. But I didn't know Elizabeth Banks directed it. That really came through. It was, you know, it was a blast. But
it did have a couple of those like Farrelly Brothers type moments where you think they're not really going to do this on camera, right? And then they keep getting close, and you're like, no, they're not actually going to do this. And then they do it, and you're like, oh my god, I didn't think you could do that in a movie.
There were some pretty shocking moments.
Yeah.
Was it Margot Martindale? Is that her name? Margot Martindale, the forest ranger.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah.
Her last name is Martindale for sure.
I didn't recognize. Anyway,
she's again another like very well respected actor who's been doing this for a long time.
Yeah,
boy, her death in that is not glamorous. <It's>, I thought, oh god, you're not gonna do that, right? Nope, you did. Okay,
I think my favorite part was whenever the two like middle school age children find the bag of cocaine and dare each other to eat it.
And then they do
eat it. That was the part I was like, I really didn't think that that's how this scene was going to go. And it, by God, it did.
Now they didn't like it.
No.
So that's irresponsible. I think
it was a scared straight type thing.
Yes.
Yeah. They really should. Like,
oh my God.
When they do the dare program, they should really bring like a tablespoon of cocaine and force 9-year-old child.
Open your mouth.
Yeah. Open your mouth. You're next.
Well, yeah.
Sucks, the doesn't one kid it? Does no. It.
But you are high, right? The one kid does it, and then the other kid sees how bad that was, and then the other kid also does it.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, this is how this movie's gonna go. Okay, I'm in. Let's do it. So that was another. I stayed up late that night.
Also. That might have been worth it. I don't know if I would have stayed up for the concert. Cocaine Bear for the first time. That is.
It was something. Well, and it's clearly a movie Aaron is not going to watch with me.
No.
So if I'm going to watch it, it's got to be when I'm out of town.
No. I watched it laying in my bed on my phone with headphones on because that's the only way I knew I was going to be able to watch this movie. So.
Yeah. Pretty good. That's my water. Well, we have a long night. Should we get to it?
Sure.
Okay, so we're gonna just a warning for the audience. This is double show recording night, so you know, God help us all. Patrick's not drinking, so maybe it'll be okay. I didn't get the memo, so we'll see how this goes. But here's the other warning about tonight's doubleheader is that I thought I was gonna have time to research two stories.
Right. As you promised.
But it turns out, as I did promise.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I am bad at time management. and so this is today's.
Especially when Cocaine Bear is on. Let's be honest.
I mean, I did. Okay. I had two choices.
Yeah.
I have no regrets.
I'm just imagining you watching Cocaine Bear the whole time thinking, please let there be a ghost in this. Please let there be a ghost
please
in
let this.
This
be research. Please let this be research. Please, please, please. Don't let Patrick yell at me about watching Cocaine Bear.
And the credits rolling. You're like, fuck, 2 hours. Damn it.
And I did Google for a little bit the true story behind Cocaine Bear to see if a ghost popped up, but I didn't want to go down that rabbit hole. So it was on, I think on Tuesday, I reached out to Jen Swanson. Mm-hmm. And I said, Jen, I really hate to ask you. You do so much for this podcast for literally nothing. But, you know, she's done some research for shows before and she's offered several times. And I said, would you be up for doing research for one episode? I'll do one, but if you one, be really helpful.
Sure.
And she, of course, because she is Jen Swanson, said, absolutely, happy to. And so I said, thank you so much. So I was on Tuesday. And then on Wednesday, as you may recall, Patrick, I looked at my calendar and I remembered because of my calendar that we were actually going to record tonight on a Thursday instead of our usual Monday. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh no, we have one day. And I texted Jen back and I said, I don't know what to do. can you have your story due by tomorrow or done by tomorrow? And she, and so here's what she sent me, not one, but two stories.
Whoa.
Now, here's what I'll say. One of her stories I'm going to read tonight. The other one is so good, and it's such a good story. I want to go back in and put in some other, because like as I was reading it, I was like, oh my God, there are some good details here that I really want to dig into a little bit. So I'm going to put that one on the back burner until next time we record. But one of hers was absolutely perfect. So that's what we're going to do right now. And then I happened to have a backup story done. And we're going to do that one next. So that's our two, but thank you so much, Jen. So much. You do so much for this show and more evidence that, Patrick and I are the ones who do the least work of all of
easily.
Us, on this podcast. So, so this one is completely done by Jen. I've read through it once, and so it's going to be sort of an exploration for both of us.
Okay. Do you read through your own notes more than once?
No, but as I type them, that feels like three times.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair.
It's like an X3.
Mm-hmm. Because you always seem surprised by things you find in your notes. That always strikes
me
as odd.
Well, every once in a while, yeah. Listen. Yeah. Sometimes I'm just delighted to see that I learned. I have so much going on. I have the amount of brain space I dedicate to the research in this show, I think is
appropriate.
I don't know. Yeah. It's exactly what people expect, what it's always been. And I won't apologize for that. Okay. With that said, do you want to start our first story of the night?
Yes.
Okay. Am I reading this right? I am. Okay. Jacob Heather Ringtone.
Jacob Heather Ringtone
was born in Durham, England on March 7th, 1814 to Rebecca and John Heatherington. Heatherington. Jacob started working in the coal banks in England at 7 years old. What do you think a coal bank is?
A coal bank? Is that like a... Well, it's not a mine. They would have said that. So coal bank. I don't know.
It's a bank where you, instead of money, you have coal. Instead of gold and coins, you have coal.
Boy, that seems like a dangerous bank, doesn't it?
Like, started at 7, had black lung by 7.5.
7, I started working at the dynamite factory. You know, things worked out pretty good.
I don't know what that is, but when he was 7, it doesn't matter what it is. 7 years old is too old to have a
absolutely.
Job.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Or
yeah.
So, too young. Too young is the right word. Sorry.
That was
Maple,
funny.
If you're listening, I don't think you're about working age.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, admittedly, it's probably a pretty easy job. You know, I mean, you're not going to like hand a 7-year-old a pickaxe. That's going to take forever. So it's probably going to be something stupid, like going out and getting everybody Jimmy John's or something.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think there are probably some nearby Jimmy John's for sure. let's see. His family moved to the U.S. where he continued to mine coal. Oh, so he continued to mine coal. So I think coal banks may be coal mines.
Okay. Maybe like above ground coal mines or something.
Should I Google this?
Sure, why not?
All right, you make some banter while I Google coal banks.
I'm you know, it's beautiful that he found his calling so early in life of being a coal miner, because they moved and he went right back to coal mining, I assume at the ripe old age of 8.5, 9, yeah. Something like that.
Yeah, he took a break for a while to be a seaman. Then you got two American. I was like, that's not for me. I'm a coal man.
Back in the hole.
Coal man back in the hole. I go, coal bank. Here it is. An exposed seam of coal. So it's like easy. It's like cheaters coal mining.
Yeah.
Okay. So which that's 7-year-old work.
Yeah. You show up at the coal mine and they're like, how old are you? 12? No, bullshit. You're 12.
Get in the mine. This is 7-year-old work. So they moved to the U.S. where he continued to mine coal with his father until his father died in 1837 or maybe 1838. So he's like 23, 24 by this point.
Mm-hmm.
So now he's definitely a coal miner.
Yes.
Not a coal banker.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Jacob and his brothers, they took over the coal bank. Huh. I don't know.
I mean, anyway,
they take over the operation.
I mean, you can do that a couple different ways. You could do it by force.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm the captain now. This is my coal bank now.
Yeah. Are you suggesting that perhaps they murdered their father to take over the coal bank?
Oh, does the father? Yeah. Maybe.
Now, this is an important thing to call out here. Mm. Now that Jen has done literally all the research, I have no context. I cannot help you.
I mean, I don't know. 40 whatever is pretty young to die in the coal mining industry in the 19th century, I would imagine.
I'm not sure that's true. So Jacob and his brother, they take over the coal bank and they work together for a little over a year.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't say why that relationship ends. I assume someone died, but not Jacob, because his name continues on here.
Okay.
Jacob then goes to work for 5 years for Captain Fink.
Okay.
The old Captain Fink.
Captain, old trustworthy Captain Fink.
Yes, the most trustworthy. And,
Captain Metaphor. Let's see. I don't know. Captain Fink seems pretty trustworthy. I mean,
let me Google the etymology of the word Fink. Boo boo doesn't appear before 1838. That's weird.
Well, where does that come from? Gotta be a coincidence.
Probably. Let's find out. So he works for 5 years for Captain Fink, mining coal. And at the end of that time, he had saved $500.
That's a lot.
Was a lot. Mm-hmm. Boy, what is $500 in 18? Let's see, 5 years.
I don't know how much coal that is.
43. All right, like let's see, 1843. How much coal is $500? Let's see what Google says.
Oh, man. ChatGPT is going to have such a hard time with all this.
Not a lot of good returns here.
Just ask ChatGPT how much $500 in 1843 would buy you in coal. I'm sure she'll figure it out. It'll be fine.
Okay. I'm going to use ChatGPT 4. That seems important for this one.
Mm-hmm.
How much? Well, say it again.
How much coal
could you buy
in 1843 with $500?
Okay. Let's see. ChatGPT says to estimate how much coal one could buy in 1843 for $500. We need to consider a few variables.
The average price of
coal per ton.
This is so much talking.
What a nerd.
Just scroll down. Just what's her answer?
She's still working. This is the longest answer I've literally ever seen.
This is a computer.
Still going.
Still going. Oh
God, still going. She's on a fifth paragraph of context.
I need two conversion rates. I need the inflation thing and I need the coal thing.
Well, paragraph 5 starts with, during the 19th century, especially in the early to mid-1800s, coal was a crucial energy source, powering factories, trains, and steamships.
Oh my God.
Wait, here's a mathematical formula. That's in paragraph 5, 6, 7, 8.
It's taking a little long to get down to math.
What is happening?
I don't know about you, but I'm liking ChatGPT-4. Seems pretty reliable.
Let's do a rough calculation based on average of this range. Say $3 per ton to see how much coal $500 could buy in 1843. See,
there we go. Okay.
Amount of coal equals total money over price per ton equals 500 divided by 3. This is a very rough estimate. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Here we go. Buried in the 10th paragraph. Jesus Christ. You could buy approximately 167 tons of coal.
See? How hard? That was not hard.
It was helpful in the end.
Mm-hmm. We came up with a number. I'm just going to trust it at this point. But it really
I'm not going to ask again. Jesus. 167 tons. That's a lot of coal.
Mm-hmm. Probably too much. Yep. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, boy. Anyway, so he took that money, and instead of coal, he invested it in land.
Hmm.
So Jacob buys some land. On May 8th, 1835, Jacob marries Eliza Betsy Armstrong. I don't know how Betsy is a nickname of Eliza, but it is in quotation marks.
Isn't Eliza a nickname of Elizabeth and Betsy a nickname of Elizabeth?
Hold on a second. Let me ask ChatGPT.
Hold on a second. Can we go back to ChatGPT 3? Four is not working very well right now.
Listen, let's make a list of questions to ask Jen.
Okay.
For the next time we record, which will be three episodes from now.
Mm, which will be like a year and a half from now. We're going to, yeah. We'll...
So he marries Betsy, and she's from West Wheeling.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a note here. Oh my God, they had 14 kids.
Oh.
9 boys and 5 girls. Now, how many do you think survived?
Survived.
I want to say, hold on. They had, how many survived to quote unquote normal ages?
A pretty gruesome way to express it, Jen, but that's fine. 14, normal age, I'm going to imagine, is at least 25 years old.
Hard to say. Let me ask
Jen. No, God, no. We're here all night. I will say, out of those 14, I'll just write down the middle. 7 total.
They got 9.
Ooh, it's not as good. Well, but they've got coal money, so they can.
Yeah, but they also have coal. I don't know. I think those cancel each other out.
It's like Philip Morris's kids. All the best doctors in the world, but they're still smoking cigarettes from age 2.
They're still giving that new baby cigar into the newborn baby's mouth. Yeah. So it's tough.
That's where the tradition started from, is from, giving the baby their first smoke.
I think so. So they end up with 9 surviving children. Now, by 1839, Jacob owns all the coal mines in the Ohio Valley.
Ooh, that's a lot.
Man. Maybe, but maybe it's 2.
Mm, okay, that's fair. I mean, the Ohio Valley's big, but...
Is it? How big is it?
It's all of Ohio.
It's all valley? I don't.
I think it's all Ohio. Hill.
Cincinnati has some hills.
Yeah.
So that's wrong.
Hmm. Still think it's more than 2 coal mines.
How big is the Ohio Valley? I'm just going to straight Google this one.
Sure.
Oh, it's a subregion in Kentucky. So I'm starting to think you don't know what you're talking about. Now, it does include, it runs 658 miles.
There's more than 2 coal mines in there.
Substantial amount of, yes. Okay. All right.
Hmm.
All right, I think you're right. So he owns all the coal mines in that valley, and he worked those with his employees and his best friend, Jack. Jack was a mule.
Okay. Is this her note or your note here?
It's her note, and it says, which he worked with his employees and his best friend, Jack, comma, the mule. So... I assume that's literal. Maybe his best friend Jack was nicknamed the mule, but
So he's the one that does all the work. Yeah. I'm the brains.
Either way.
Yeah.
And so Jacob builds a house near the bank of the Ohio River in 1847. And this is or maybe becomes known eventually as the Bel Air House.
Oh, anyway, okay.
So it was real fresh. Mm-hmm.
The Fresh Prince of a sub-region of Kentucky. he never plays those extra couple verses, so maybe that's what one of them is.
If you find the original 8-track of the album that he and Jazzy Jeff did, that lyric actually, you get that. Yeah. It does change the entire thing a lot. So they build the Blair House, 1847. Now this area here is still known. Oh no, it's still known today as the Native American internment area.
Oh,
oh no. Native Americans who lived in this area used to bury their leaders, chieftains, shamans, healers, and witch doctors in these caves.
Mm-hmm. And then, ironically, those bodies turn into coal. So, I mean, I don't want to... I don't want to tell you how to do things, but...
But on the other side of that, coal is coal.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't love the idea of burning dinosaurs either, mm-hmm. but... I need to eat. Also, that's not... It's, of course, never good to, like, build your land and mine your coal on any sort of burial ground.
Mm-hmm.
But there's, like... Leaders, chieftains, shamans, healers, and witch doctors.
Mm-hmm.
It's a concentrated mess yeah. of souls you do not want to mess with. This is poor planning all around. And the tribes used to hold their ceremonies in this area, and they practiced magic here. In 1754, so way back before Bel-Air House was built, the French and Indian War rampaged through this area. And the native massacres at the hands of French soldiers was large.
Oh.
I assume that's true. And that's all. End of that note.
Okay.
Ugh. The Bel-Air House is also believed to be haunted because of an 1893 coal mine explosion that happened in the Ohio Valley.
Mm-hmm.
So one of those two mines blew up, I guess.
Okay.
42 men were killed in the explosion, and it took days to recover the bodies. Probably because they're getting, like, the pieces.
I would figure, yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. And because probably very dusty down there.
Yeah, yeah.
Keep pulling stuff back up. Is this a foot? No, it's a rock. Is this a foot? No, it's also a rock.
This one's a root.
Yeah.
The house that Jacob built now sits above part of that coal mine that exploded and killed all those people.
Mm. Must have been a spectacular show.
I bet it was great. Oh, thank you, Jen. Fun fact.
Wham!
The founder and original owner of Bel-Air was Jacob Davis, a different Jacob.
Mm-hmm.
He was a successful businessman who settled in the town. Jacob... Heather Ringtone,
mm-hmm.
along with Captain Fink, had close ties with Davis, who was also an abolitionist. Together, they worked with Reverend Truman of the Bel-Air United Methodist Church to free runaway slaves. So this house was on the Underground Railroad for a while.
Oh.
That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. I guess it's kind of appropriate if you're a coal magnate. You have an underground railroad. Anyway.
that one I will not allow.
That's fine.
Now sadly, Jacob died on June 15th, 1904 in Bel-Air, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jen has here in parentheses, don't know how. I will say I did give her about 36 hours to turn this around. So, so that's on me, I think.
This is cohesive. I love it. Lot to work with here.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jacob's son Alexander inherited the coal mine company,
mm-hmm.
and he was assisted by his daughter, by Alexander's daughter. Oh gosh, Lydie, how do you Lyde?
Liddy,
maybe
Liddy.
Okay, Liddy.
Yeah. Oh.
Okay. So Alexander is running it with his daughter, Liddy. The mm-hmm. business starts to fail due to Alex hearing and seeing things that are not there.
Yeah.
That would distract you, I think.
I would think, yeah, especially if, like, your whole job is sending people under the ground. If they're like, this guy doesn't really, guy doesn't have, you know, all his marbles in place up here, but I'm pretty sure the mine that he's making me go into has got to be top notch.
Gotta be real safe. I'm gonna keep working for this person, no question. Alex also started to have epileptic seizures.
Oh man.
And he declared that, quote, demons were trying to kill him.
That's probably what it feels like. I mean, I don't know, but I've got to imagine it doesn't feel not like that. So
here's what I think. I think if demons are trying to kill you, they will succeed.
Yeah.
End of thought.
Yeah.
I think if you think demons are trying to kill you, they're probably not actually, because that's probably actually a you thing and not a them thing. Because if demons really do want to kill you, they're going to...
Nothing's stopping them, really.
There's nothing. There's nothing to stop them from doing that. So
these two demons are like, let's go kill that guy tonight. And then just as soon as they do, they're like, oh no, he yelled really loud. Well, I guess we'll have to try some other time.
I'm pretty scared of that, so we better not try it tonight.
Let's definitely not kill him because he turned on the lights at the last second. Oh, you know I hate the lights.
He knows our one weakness. So Alex Heatherington was deemed incompetent and locked up in an asylum.
Oh.
Which feels like the right move.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think asylums in what is this, 1904? I don't think that's a good place for anyone.
No.
It might have been a fair diagnosis, though.
It probably ranks somewhere above coal mine, but I don't know how many spots in between the two.
Actually, the asylum in this case was in a coal mine. So the Ohio Valley is chock-a-block. And so they... Shortly after the commitment of Alex to the mental institution, his daughter... Liddy took over the entire coal company. She's putting a Liddy on it. And you made that joke happen, and I hope you're happy. Because I was going to say Lighty.
Wouldn't make sense then.
Well, I don't. Okay, I'm missing the point a little bit, but okay. A few years later, Liddy also tragically died in... Okay. A few years later, Liddy also tragically died in the seance room of the Bel Air house.
Okay.
Do you have any questions?
I mean, obviously the first question is this mid seance that she dies. That's
there are so many questions. I mean... Jen, you can't just spring seance room on us like this. You
also, who creates the seance room? Is it the father who thinks that, like, demons are after
him? This is the seance room?
Yeah.
Was it like part of the original plans, like the blueprint? It's like, well, this is your bedroom. Here's the kitchen. Now over here out of the side, we have the seance room, of course, where you will obviously want to do all your seances.
Behind that, the solarium, and after that, the servants' quarters. I don't know. Seance room seems like it's like a fourth bedroom type thing where, like, do we make this an office? You know, I
made mine a podcast studio. Yeah. Should I have made this a seance room? Now I'm second guessing my decision.
7 days in a week, man. You don't have, it doesn't have.
There are, that's true. That's a good point. There are 6 days a week. We are not recording this podcast here. I could raise so much dead.
I'd probably make the podcast a hell of a lot easier on the seventh day as well.
Like, if I find a way to store them in here, that's going to be great for the show.
It's not, as this goes, we'll be talking to whatever this guy's name is. I don't know. He just screams a lot through his eyeballs. I'm not sure.
Next week, we'll be talking to Abe. Put your pants back on. God damn it. So sick of running around his ass naked. So she dies in the seance room. And when Liddy died, Edwin, oh, I looked this up earlier, except Edwin is her son. Edwin became distraught and at the same time obsessed with the idea of content. Oh, no, sorry. Edwin is his sister.
I'm sorry.
Okay, let's start over again. This is my fault, too, because last time, as you'll recall, Jen did notes. I was like, this is really great. There's so much detail here. I think we do with less detail. And now Jen has left out only a couple details. One of them being when the seance room was built and another who Edwin was. But when Liddy died, Edwin became distraught, at the same time obsessed with the idea of contacting his sister through any medium possible. So Liddy's brother, Edwin, comes into play. He wants to contact his sister. He starts consulting occult experts. Several of them were brought in from different corners of the country to help Edwin connect with his deceased sister.
Equally amazed that there was already a seance room. They're like, wait, hang on.
I've been trying for years to get my husband to build a seance room. How did you get this? This is great.
I don't know if it's one of those like Mike Holmes, you know, come and rescue a bad DIY job type things where it's like, I don't know, this contractor built this seance room and I think he did it wrong. And they invite all these people in like, oh yeah, yeah. The angles are all wrong here. This is.
Yeah. You want an octagon really is what you want for the bouncing of the energy. Yeah.
But we're going to fix it for you. We're going to make it right. And then we're going to talk to your sister.
And you'll never see her again. At the same time, Edwin became fascinated with the afterlife and started studying the occult himself. And he also started studying the art of communicating through different mediums, because what he wanted to do was strengthen his own ability to speak with Liddy.
Oh, okay. So he didn't have to be in the seance room. He could like take it on the go. Yeah,
he has one in the middlemen.
Yeah, here. I get it.
Next note. Currently, the Bel Air house has 17 portals.
I'm liking this. This is a wild ride.
I'm starting to think that we should let Jen do the notes every week, because this is the most excited I've ever been.
17 portals. Okay.
17 portals. What does that mean? Give me your best thoughts, Pat, on what it means. 17 portals in the house.
I don't even know if my house has 17 doors in it. No, it definitely doesn't. It definitely doesn't have 17 doors in
it. I've been to your house. There are three doors.
Yeah.
Okay. So, by the way, here's a picture of the Bel Air. Would you like to see a picture of this house?
Oh, please.
Open up here while your toilet runs. Let's look at this. This is share screen show house.
Okay. It's fine.
Yeah. Which window do you think looks into the seance room?
Ooh, I think that big the big round one on the second floor is
Yes. I agree.
Yeah. Other option would be attic.
You think
attic
so?
Attic would be pretty, I mean,
I don't know.
I mean, it depends. Is the seance room again gonna be like a multi-purpose room, like we do seances here, and then you know my daughter does
that's this
yoga.
One for sure. That's the middle.
That's a multi-purpose one. If it's a dedicated seance room, it's going in the attic. You know,
yeah. Is it the room where you like? We don't want. No one can know we have this because they will not come back over for dinner parties if they know we have a seance room. So we will put it up here. Or maybe with that in mind, maybe this is the seance room.
Oh, the scary little shed out back.
Little shed in back.
I could see that. Yeah,
not impossible.
Mm-hmm. Looks like it. Like their podcasting studio is what it looks like to me, not in the back.
God, I'd kill for a podcasting studio in the backyard. As I check my monitors, girls are okay. All right. Where are we here? Okay, so currently the Bel Air house has 17 portals. Mm-hmm. I didn't see any in that picture, but I don't know. I don't know what I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. So
is she talking about windows? It might have been 17 windows.
Anything is possible.
I don't know. I mean,
gosh, let's keep reading. Maybe an answer will appear. Through ITC communication with Edwin.
Mm-hmm.
ITC communication. Is that a term we've come up against?
ITC. I don't know.
ITC. Let me Google ITC communication. Interstate Telecommunications Cooperative? That's not right.
No.
ITC Communications Ghost.
What does ITC stand for?
Spirit Communicating Through Devices. That seems... Oh, Instrumental Transcommunication.
Okay.
All right. Ghost stuff.
Is this one of these like the divining rods or the... The little boxes of electronics that you use to with the knobs.
These
are on the ones,
yeah. These ones that like the guys on the Travel Channel when they go to the ghost houses have the little box they go record and
yeah.
there's a ghost here saying, hello, I need you. And they replay it. And it's like, and you're like, yep, that's it.
That was totally worth watching this show for 45 minutes. But said, listen up. At the very end.
Yeah, you heard him say, I love you. Mm. Yes, through ITC communication with Edwin.
It's like those people, who like claim their dogs can talk. Like, oh yeah, my dog says I love you, and the dogs are rah, rah, rah.
Well, okay. Did you hear it?
Yeah.
You heard it, right? You heard it. It's clear as day.
I was like, uh huh, yeah. COVID was hard on all of us, wasn't it?
So through ITC communication with Edwin, he claims he unknowingly opened portal. Oh, here we go. He unknowingly opened portals to the other side all over the Belt.
17 house. Times. Come on.
That's not an accident. That, one time, yeah. Totally an accident. Mm-hmm. Two, maybe three times.
Yeah.
Okay. Accident.
Yeah. Kind of getting your bearings. 17 times.
No. I'm sorry. 17 portals. Come on. You are opening those motherfuckers on absolute purpose.
Mm-hmm. Fool me once. Shame on me.
This is great to watch. Keep going.
Won't be fooled again.
Okay. Boy, you messed up almost every part of that. And I am here for it. So, now Edwin and Liddy were also known to have servants.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly all of them were named Mary. Now that is, I feel rather sad about that because pretty sure that I've seen Roots, and I think that's a Roots style thing where just so many people came over as enslaved people and they were like, your name is Mary now, not whatever your name used to be. Now it's Mary, and this really shows the limitations of the imagination of white people. I think, and we should be open about that here.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to add anything to that, Patrick?
Do not.
Wise man. There was one particular... God, Jen, come on. There was one particular Mary that had a child inside of the Bel Air house, and it was rumored that the child had the bloodline that was needed... All right, I'm going to start from the beginning. I'm going to do it all the way through. It's going to be great. Sometimes I wonder if Jen sets me up. you be the decider. Here we go. There was one particular Mary that had a child inside of the Bel Air house, and it was rumored that the child had the bloodline that was needed to allow an entity inside of the Bel Air house to grow stronger.
Okay. Who rumored this?
I would love for you to dissect that statement for me because I have so many questions. I don't know who rumored it. I don't know what it means for a bloodline to allow an entity. What entity?
This sounds like the sort of thing that maybe originates from some of the ghost hunters they've had over to the house. That's where I think this is coming from. That would make sense.
TLC says we need 6 more minutes. Yeah. Can you talk about some nonsense for a while? Yeah. We'll try. There is data documenting the fact that a servant's child was lured to the attic window and plunged to his death out of the window.
Oof.
This energy recurred later and lured another child to the attic window to open the window and jump. This incident occurred a third time. An adult male investigator was lured to the window to jump.
Oh, interesting.
So that's why Chad no longer is on the TLC show.
Can you hear it? It's saying jump out the window.
I'm gonna later the home would become abandoned.
Obviously.
For I think obvious reasons. And neighbors would often claim to still see figures within it. Until Kristen Lee comes into possession of the home in 2005. This is when the true extent of the hauntings would be realized.
Oh.
Kristen, along with her family, would make contact with a number of spirits and have many life-changing paranormal experiences within the home.
Hmm.
Boy, there are a lot of bullet points here. Let's see.
Let's hit the highlights.
Many have heard voices, footsteps, and seen shadow figures or full-bodied apparitions in the house. People have witnessed poltergeist activity, and some have even been physically attacked or marked by the unseen.
Mm, like a cat might?
Peed on, but let me make a quick note here. Boop, 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 boop. They've been physically attacked or peed on by the unseen.
Some non-neutered ghosts have been known to mark.
Did you see, by the way, speaking of ghost penises, did you see on our social media, I think it was on Facebook the other day, longtime listener and dear friend of the show, Jen Jones, posted a thing, maybe it was on Instagram, but she posted a one of those like redone vintage book covers that was all about like, punch a ghost in its dick and its balls. And it was like this like 50s kid like punching a dick. It was great.
That's one way to tell if it's a ghost.
Yep. Anyway, so back to the real story. It's even said to be home to many spirits. Makes sense. Mm-hmm. We've been talking about a lot of those. One in particular is a frequent visitor who Kristen Lee says they've heard from many times. Quote, we do a lot of communication sessions and remarkable things come out, like Edwin Hetherington. He actually sits here and talks to us through pieces of equipment that we use. Lee recalls claims of people connecting with their deceased loved ones. Others report unexplained scratches or incidents where their hair is being pulled.
Oh.
Don't love that.
Mm-mm.
Kristen's 12-year-old son felt a malevolent presence in his bedroom, so he started staying at his grandmother's house. Now, it could be his mom just doesn't have good candy.
I was going to say, yeah. Like, if I give my kids 10 minutes and a map to grandma's house, they would all live there. Forever.
And that's why every time we drive to grandma's house, we take a different route. Mm-hmm. Because we do not want the kids to know.
Dad, I don't want to put the sack on my head. Put it on!
Oh, boy. One night during the winter, Lee felt the cushion go down on the couch by her side. She woke up and saw a gray figure of a man. He was translucent, like a gray mist, so to speak, but there was physical features about him.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a flat affect. He had no expression. She said, quote, I screamed, who are you? What do you want? What are you doing here? And no expression, nothing, just staring at me. It was pretty creepy.
Mm.
Bella, our dog, was scrambling around the room. You know, her nails were tapping on the wooden floor. Total, what a dog move.
Yeah.
She was barking to one point. She was barking to one point. I said, Bella, calm down. And when I said that, I saw my breath. Now, again, she wakes. There's a ghost sitting next to her on the couch, and she's preoccupied with the dog barking.
Yeah. Like, you're being very annoying. Now, anyway, can I get back to my entire reality changing? Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. When I said that, I saw my breath, and it was cold, but it wasn't cold enough for my breath to come out of my mouth. Now, that's wrong. That's I know what she's trying to say, but that's not it. Just. For the casual listener,
the breath will always come out of the mouth, guys.
Correct. I've been assured by Sister Mary Paul in my high school English class or high school chemistry class.
We've done a lot of medical episodes on here, and that's what I've learned.
So that was very strange. And then the man got up, and I felt the cushion come back up. The weight of the cushion, it just rose up again. And he walked through the living room into the foyer, and he vanished.
Mm.
After I tried to wrap my head around what had happened, I physically got up, and I shook Hefe.
The dog?
I assume her husband.
Oh.
And I was like, I just saw a ghost. And he says, you work too hard. you're too tired. Go back to sleep. You had a bad dream. And that's where we left it. So he mansplained it away. And she, I assume, learned that she was wrong. Because that's how it goes.
Yeah, putting myself in Hefe's shoes, I'd do the exact same thing. If my wife's like, wake me up in the middle of the night. I just saw a ghost. I'm like, yeah, I think you just need to go back to bed. I think
that's and the thought process here is not, I don't think you're telling the truth. It's what is the thing I can say that will get me back to sleep most quickly right now? We can talk about this in a real way in the morning, but what are the words that I need to say to go back to bed?
Patrick, the basement's on fire. Right. We're not in the basement though. We're in a different part of the house.
Good night.
Yeah.
gosh, Amy is lucky.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. One of the most well-known stories associated with the Bel Air house is that of a young girl named Emily. According to legend, Emily died in the house after falling down the stairs, and her spirit is said to still haunt the house, and visitors have reportedly seen her ghost, and they have heard her voice.
Hmm.
Other reported hauntings include the presence of a malevolent spirit known as the Shadow Man.
Hmm.
Also strange mists and orbs and unexplained temperature changes. Some visitors have even claimed to have been physically attacked by unseen entities while inside the house. And final note here, the Bel Air house is now rented out by Kristen. Which I think is an excellent way to end a story. Thank you, Jen. how much would you pay in rent? Like, or how low would your rent have to be to live in a house where you knew that you were convinced was haunted?
Oh boy. I don't know. I'd probably have him take at least $75 off easily.
That feel off what?
Off the rent.
Well, I know, but if your rent is $3,000, $75 doesn't feel like a whole lot.
Hey, you know, value is value.
So that's a flat rate.
That's a flat.
You're saying okay.
It's like a pet fee in reverse.
Okay. Think about the wording of that for a while, but I would do a percentage for sure. You would do flat. $75.
Flat ghost fee. $75.
Like if you walked in, okay, during the tour of the apartment, you're walking around, you're going upstairs, you're checking the plumbing and stuff.
Right.
And you turn a corner and there is a ghost and you see it.
Right.
And that ghost is screaming at you or whatever.
I mean,
$75 off this rent, please.
$75. That would be the silent ghost fee. But I mean, if they're going to scream, that's just as bad as loud neighbors. That's much worse.
It's bad.
I would need to take up a lot more than that if it was a screaming ghost.
Okay, how much more?
$150.
Okay, so okay. I mean, double. That's a percentage wise. That's a big jump. Feels like you're pretty comfortable living with a ghost, is what I'm taking away from this. Okay.
Could be.
Well, no further questions, I guess. Well, thank you so much to Jen Swanson for putting together these notes. Gosh, I had a blast going through this. What a wild trip. And I hope you all did too. Patrick, did you like this? How would you rate Jen and her abilities? And go ahead.
Oh, I'd say like a 75.
Just love that number so much. I don't even know what that, I don't know what that is. Well, I'm sorry I asked. And listen, Jen, thank you so much. This was great. I had a blast. Hope you all had a blast. Is This a Ghost is a production of Smith Show Media. The notes were taken by not me, Clayton Smith. And all the funny jokes are from Patrick Dean. The notes this week actually were taken by Jen Swanson, who also does our video editing. Thank you so much, Jen. Our audio editing is Jeremy Swanson. Our social media editor
Jeremy
is
Montoya, by the way.
God damn it.
I know Swanson does everything on this show, but she don't do the audios.
Well, sorry, Jen and Jeremy, you're both going to have to get divorced, marry each other, and take Jen's former married non-maiden name. Mm-hmm. It's weird, but it's for the podcast. So
it's canon now, guys.
Do it.
Sorry.
Jeremy Montoya is Jeremy's name. Sorry. God, that's like the third time I've gotten Jeremy's name wrong. And I know Jeremy's name and what he does here very well. And I do want to stress, I am so grateful, despite what it sometimes sounds like. Did I mention I was at South By for the last 5 days? Mm-hmm. And I am so tired. Anyway, and social media is done by Kai Valanis. Thank you to all of you, to all the people whose names I got, probably flawlessly once I edit this, I assume. Hey, Pat, you ready to go pour a drink and join me as we get ready for our second episode recording of the night?
I think I will.
Thank God. All right. If you liked this, please give us a rate and review on whatever you listen to. And boy, we're going to dive in. We're going to see you again next time on Is This a Ghost? Thank you.